This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, signature support from the office of East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor President. And the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. And our guest to begin is Louis Unglesby. We do want to note that a week ago today, it was Memorial Day, and our leadoff guest was one Smiley Gray Anders Jr. And Smiley Anders, who had been fighting respiratory issues for years, he died Friday, age 86. He wrote over 12,500 columns in his 45 years as a now 6-day-a-week columnist for The Advocate. His column goes away, but his memory lingers. Tomorrow, at the 4th of June, would have been the 45th anniversary of his column. And we actually taped a segment that was to air tomorrow, and we will air it as scheduled, with Smiley Anders now posthumously talking about what happened in his tenure in Baton Rouge with The Advocate, the man from Natchez, Mississippi, who was truly a man about town. He loved life, people loved him, and he got around. He knew this city like the back of his hand, and he died at his home in Spanish Town with his wife, Lady Catherine, at his side. But we will miss the remarkable Smiley Anders. Louis Unglesby began his career downtown with Sam D'Amico, and he's been practicing law now for a few years, and he is with us, and I'm thinking of you, Louis. I guess it's about 50 years now you've been practicing law.
Yes, and funny you're talking about Smiley Anders. I remember I would see Smiley at the newsroom when the Advocate was down at the by the river. If they wanted to talk to you, sometimes you'd go down there and see the journalist. But he was, of course, one of them, just a terrific fellow.
He was a terrific guy, and he would ask him a question, and even though he was a journalist, and he was. And by the way, 6 times his column got the items victory in the National Awards competition. They quit the competition because he kept winning every year. But he did not like the former president, Donald Trump, and he let that be known in our last discussion with him, and he died, ironically, a day after Donald Trump was found guilty on 34 counts. Number 45 has 34 felony counts. But Donald Trump being Donald Trump, he raised $53 million, he says, in his first night after his new distinction as a convicted felon, and he remains the favorite to win the election, which is 21 weeks from tomorrow. So how do you see the trial? Was it a witch hunt, as he says, or was it a legitimate trial that makes him unworthy for service in the nation's, the world's highest office?
Well, it's the second for sure, and let's get clear. The legal system is just fine. Donald Trump benefited from the legal system for many years through his various bankruptcies and manipulations. And let just think, everyone that likes Trump, think of it this way. He's going to trial down the street from where his business is and where he made his alleged fortune. Down the street. Those are his friends and neighbors that are judging him. Now, you would think somebody that had spent his career in New York in business would still be putting on character witnesses. A week later, you know, people from philanthropy, people from business, people from banking, people from all the people he did business with. The fact that Donald Trump couldn't even call a single character witness, where I, a leader in the Republican Party, would cause me a lot of concern. It really would. Here's a man that wants to say, I want to sit across the table from the world leaders, who couldn't sit 6 feet from his fellow neighbors, take the witness stand, take an oath, and say, look, let me explain this to you. Mm-hmm. With all the majesty of the presidency around him and the celebrity of having been the president of the United States, he couldn't sit there and look them in the eye and withstand cross-examination from a DA in New York. That's pathetic. As a man, independent of lawyering, that's pathetic.
Well, and he did say he would take the stand, and he didn't. And at one point he said they were keeping him from taking the stand, which we know is bogus, but he didn't. But there have been times when you've had clients who did not take the stand.
Oh, there's not. There's no reason. Many times there's no reason to take the stand. But in Trump's case, there was unrebutted facts that he says, his lawyers kept saying, and he would go out on the steps and say, it's not true, I never had sex with Stormy Daniels. Well, fine, say it under oath. You say Michael Cohen went off and did this on his own? Fine. Sit down, calmly explain that Michael was your friend. He got excited you were going to be the president. He went off and did something. When you heard about it later, you couldn't discard the poor guy. He tried to help you. Weisselberg came up with this idea. That's what you did. Now, whether that's a legitimate explanation, whether it holds a bit of truth to it or not, probably doesn't. But that was what Trump would say in his press conferences. But he didn't have the courage to try to say it under oath, which tells you all you need to know about the case.
Well, he opted not to take the stand, and I think he was calling the shots, and he didn't want to perjure himself, I'm sure, and his lawyers urged him not to, but they're the ones who opened and closed the trial by saying this never happened. Well, if it never happened, the defense is pretty easy, and Stormy Daniels gave graphic detail about a lot of things, including his aftershave, his shampoo. I would think that the advantage goes to her because she did take the stand and was a compelling witness. She's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and she is perhaps the best-known Baton Rougean right now. Perhaps a Rotary Club will invite her as a speaker, Lewis.
I don't know anything about all that, but Trump, one of Trump's problems, looking at it, trying to analyze it as a lawyer, is he has these four indictments, but he doesn't have anybody that's in charge other than himself. He has a lawyer in Georgia. He has a lawyer in Washington. He has lawyers lawyers in New York, and he has, different places where he's in all this trouble. If you were sitting back as a defense attorney with a client like Trump, it's got unlimited access to resources. You can make an analysis and say, okay, South Florida, we got a lot of old Republican, retired golfers like you. You gave them tax cuts. A lot of people moved to South Florida because they don't want to pay taxes in the state in which they lived. You have a lot in common with these people. You got a judge who is a rookie that you made a judge out of nothing, who's compliant and apparently thinks you're great and will do anything you tell her.
Aileen Cannon, yeah.
Let's take this case in Florida and try it first instead of postponing it like they've done over and over. That's your best chance. If you're really innocent, then you want to hurry up and go to trial in Florida. That staves off all these other cases because of the nature of the calendar and the election. You can get found not guilty. Then you can run, you can say all these things about the justice system with some credibility. The only reason I'm guessing that didn't happen is, one, he doesn't have a quarterback that he listens to or even have one. And number two, he's very guilty in Florida and he knows it.
Well, the case in Florida is considered by many legal authorities to be the strongest, but it's in the weakest venue. Venues often matter. Does he have a point in saying that he couldn't get a fair shake in New York City? And perhaps the prosecution, no matter how strong the case might be, would have a difficult time convicting him anywhere in the Southeastern Conference.
Well, you can't move your case from the state in which you get in trouble and where you commit the crimes to some other state that you dislike better. So that all he could have done in terms of getting a change of venue, if you want to call it that, would be to change it to Buffalo or somewhere. But I don't see how when you're the only basis for a change of venue that really is any valid and exists is if there's so much overwhelming publicity that in the community that there's such strong feelings you don't have any opportunity to get a good jury on either side, that they love you so much or hate you so much. Now, after they decided the Enron case, the Supreme Court decided the Enron case, where they picked a jury in 2 hours in the middle of Houston from people who had directly owned stock in different things that Enron had caused them to lose their money in. And the Supreme Court said that was fine. The judge did a good enough job of getting a fair and impartial jury. That was the end of change of venue. And Donald Trump's lawyers knew that. They know that.
877-217-5757. For those of you listening this morning, and I know the show re-airs at night, so many of you are also listening tonight, but right now we've had some power issues, but we are getting emails, so I know some people are listening, and if you'd like to call again, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org. The always topical and loquacious Louis Unglesby is back after this 89.3 second timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Louis Owens Unglesby, who has been practicing law for a half century in Louisiana and recently named Lawyer of the Year in our state. And he is a guy who still goes to the courthouse. He's not like a lot of these advertising lawyers whose faces are on billboards, but you never see them in a courtroom. And he's analyzing what happened in a New York court of law last week as Donald John Trump was convicted on 34 counts. 34 out of 34. The jurors had 408 opportunities to say not guilty on any one of the 34, and he got 34 out of 34. And I remember I talked to Jim Brown last week. He had 53 counts. He was not guilty on 52 of them, but you got him on one, and that's all it takes. You ran into the same thing with Larry Bankston. Fine man, but I think that was one count as well. You sit there and you get not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, and then all it takes is one and the whole world changes. Well, Donald Trump, give him credit, he's resilient if nothing else, and now he's slamming the system. Maureen Dowd in her column yesterday wrote in the New York Times, the party of law and order evidently doesn't like any law it didn't order. And politically, does this have any palatable consequences for the former president, based on your view? You've been around a few elections, too, Louis Unglesby.
Well, I don't know, because the construct of moderation seems to have been extinguished somewhere along the way, and people either they seem to, right now you talk to a lot of people and it's who do I hate the least, and that's how they can turn their vote. It's very unfortunate that Biden isn't more healthy. I think Biden's a good leader, and if you just read things that Biden says, you don't hear him say them, they're quite articulate and praiseworthy. But his delivery, because of his age and I think his issues with his health, makes it tough. And so you have one guy that's loud, obnoxious, and dishonest bully who can lead three people anywhere, you know, and then you have a very smart man who can't seem to get all of his thoughts together all the time in a way that projects power. And I don't know how America, as great a country as it is, got to that predicament. I was hoping, I still am, I'm holding out this hope that because of Trump's conviction and Biden's health, both parties will have a revolution here in the next 30 days and come up with two new people.
Well, right now they're scheduled to debate on June 27th, 24 days away. And Trump being so much into swimsuit competitions as the leader of the Miss Universe pageant, I think it'd be nice if he and Biden came out with their shirts off and we could see what they looked like. Because well, as we know, fiscal discipline starts with physical discipline.
I don't know. I'd miss that. I wouldn't want to watch that. I can't imagine the poor commentators.
I would imagine people would be watching and noting. Patricia and Magnolia Woods. Good morning, Patricia. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning. It's really sad that a former president is now a felon, and there's a question of jail time. And I was wondering, this is theoretical, could the governor of New York pardon him?
Could the governor of New York pardon Donald Trump? And the answer is yes. Yes.
Yes.
The governor's a Democrat, though, so that would seem highly, highly unlikely.
Well, his no pardons are ever granted until the case is over. So Trump has to be sentenced.
Well, Gerald Ford pardoned Nixon before there was a case, but
there wasn't a case.
Right.
But I mean, the governor of New York's not going to pardon anybody until his case is over. So he's got to be sentenced and he's got to have his appeal. Then arguably, yes, he could, sure.
Well, and headline in the New York Times yesterday, experts say appeals face long odds. This is long from over. Donald Trump, the former president, current felon, as described by the New York Times, declared on Thursday, moments after a Manhattan jury convicted him on 34 counts of falsifying records to cover up a sex scandal. But this is New York, and it would appear that he is going to be a convicted felon, and that will be a description that lives with him until his dying days, unless there is some unusual happening. But will he serve any jail time?
Not here.
You don't think they'll send him to jail? Not even house confinement?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that. I mean, I really don't know what the judge's thought is. The judge seems to have been extremely, incredibly, almost supernaturally patient man in putting up with Donald Trump.
And he ruled in favor of Trump several times. And actually, I read today that he gave the prosecution the defense team, rather, the option of having the counts reduced to a misdemeanor by the jury rather than a felony. And they went for the gold and got burned badly, as you know, because if it were a misdemeanor, it would be like a traffic offense. But this is far from a misdemeanor. If it stands, he won't be able to vote, he won't be able to have a gun, and he will be known forevermore as a convicted felon.
Well, I think in that regard, Trump's goose is cooked, but that's not his problem. His problem, I mean, his big, serious, gigantic in front of him problem is either if the United States Supreme Court hurries up and makes a decision, he may wind up having to go to trial for January 6th, where I don't think he has any defenses.
And that's in Washington, D.C., another right. bad venue for him.
Yeah, I mean, he isn't going to trial in Macomb, Mississippi for that. And I think that that has got to be a very scary thing for him. Now, he seems to have a Supreme Court that's questionable in terms of its impartiality, and he may be okay. But certainly the delay has just been a gift to him. No one else would get that, you know. When the federal prosecutor asked the Supreme Court to decide something in December, 99 times out of 100, they're deciding it in January, not still messing around with it in June.
Well, Hunter Biden, the son of the current president, is going on trial today on gun charges, and this is a trial that was not stopped by his father, who supposedly controls the justice system both federally and in every state, according to Donald Trump. So what happens if there's a conviction there? Will the Trumpers use this as an analogy to him and say, look, Biden's from a corrupt family? I've heard that many times, the Biden crime family.
Well, the Biden crime family, I think, is a Trump word. I don't think anybody else, I've never heard any thoughtful person say anything about Joe Biden at all. Hunter Biden clearly has many issues. But obviously, Joe Biden has a different view, apparently, of his capacity as president over the attorney general than Trump had over his own attorney general. I mean, if Merrick Garland were, if Joe Biden could tell Merrick Garland what to do, Trump would have been indicted on January 6th. In July of 2020 or whenever it was.
Well, and remember, it was the Trump Justice Department that prosecuted Michael Cohen for the same thing, and he got 3 years. So if Trump got the same treatment as Mr. Cohen, he would be going to Rikers for 3 years. Carol in Jefferson Terrace. Carol, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes. If you believe the reporting, one of these jurors claim they get all their news from Truth Social and Twitter. That don't sound like a left-leaning partisan to me.
I don't know if that's accurate, but I know at least one juror said they watch Fox News regularly. And people who watch Fox News are generally not liberals, just like people who watch MSNBC are generally not conservatives unless they like getting upset. So to just slam the jury and say that they were on the take, this wasn't John Gotti either.
I think your callers are correct on her facts, Jim, because I think they came out, that kind of information came out off of questionnaires, often in high profile cases, or in any cases, a lot of times just for safety, I mean, saving time. They'll have jurors fill out questionnaires that tell you a lot of those things so the lawyers don't have to ask.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Lewis Owens Unglesby, and then we'll hear from Dane Sherman and Troy Hebert after this timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on deck. Two of our favorite commentators, Troy Hebert on the right, Dane Sherman on the left. We're wrapping it up with Lewis Owens Unglesby, the lawyer of the year in Louisiana. And he has been doing his thing for a half century. He's been involved politically. As we know, trial lawyers generally are for Democrats. And before we go but to our final caller about the Trump matter with Lewis Unglesby, the trial lawyers backed Jeff Landry this time. What the heck's going on, Lewis?
Well, I think Jeff's demonstrated that he appreciates the legal system and that jurors and judges in Louisiana are very fair people. Louisiana is actually a pretty conservative state when it comes, a very conservative state when it comes to the way that business is handled in the courthouse. And so there's no reason, no justification to do anything other than let the system continue.
Okay. A listener noted something we talked about last week. We might pick up with this with Troy and Dane, but Bill Cassidy, who voted for impeachment, who voted to uphold the election, was the only Republican in our delegation to do this. He was quick on the draw immediately after the verdict, saying it was a bogus verdict. He's up for re-election in 2 years. It's amazing what an election will do to cause people to have epiphanies, isn't it?
I gave money to Bill Cassidy because of his stance, and that's a shame that he would say that, because the fact is, these 12 people, they gave up 6 weeks of their lives, and there was nothing about them that's come out, and Lord knows they've been scrutinized every way possible by the world press and by the Trump group. That's in any way indicates any negativity. I mean, there's just 12 people that had the bad luck to get this job, and like all the citizens who serve on jurors, should be respected and revered. I've had a lot of cases that I wanted to win and left the courthouse with my heart broken, but I can't get mad at my jurors. I made the mistakes, or I didn't have a good case, but the jurors want to do the right thing, do the right thing, are trying very hard, and to denigrate them is really denigrating the whole concept of America.
James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Jim. Good morning to you and to your guests. Jim, I think I've come up with an appropriate nickname for our criminally convicted felon president. He's the Timex ex-president. Remember John Cameron Swayze and Timex?
I do. Takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
You got it. It's been a tough year for this criminal president, Jim. $355 million judgment against him for inflating the values of his properties. $83 million judgment against him for sexually abusing and defaming a woman. And now, Jim, Trump is banned from Canada and the UK as a convicted felon. Wow, he is taking a licking, but unfortunately he keeps on ticking.
Well, he may end up being the next president, and if he loses, it will be close. And if it's close, he will, of course, say it was a bogus rigged election, and he will immediately start running for 2028, Lewis Unglesby. He's the gift who just keeps on giving. Don't get too excited now.
I don't know how to, you know, we just wish for things in an ideal world. Think how uplifting it would have been, and how uplifting it would be even for Trump. had he walked out and said, okay, I appreciate what the jury did. They worked hard. I clearly disagree with them. I think I'm innocent, but I respect it. If he had ever said, for example, over the years, when he attacks the judges and the mm-hmm. different systems, if instead he'd said, look, everybody, calm down. Right. The legal system works. It's the third branch of government. I was in charge of the whole place. I know it's a good system. It would mean a lot to America.
Well, a listener makes a good point that, who is this? It's Hallen Monroe, who says, when Edwin Edwards was convicted, he didn't come out on the courthouse steps and attack the jury. He basically said the feds came after him, and if anybody had a case that they had come after him, it was Edwin Washington Edwards. They got the venue they wanted. They got the judge they wanted, and they kicked his lawyer off the case, his lawyer being Louis Unglesby.
But so, Edwin was always a gracious human being, and he believed in the legal system. He had been a lawyer, of course, and I don't, just as an aside that has nothing to do with the topic of just bragging on him, when he was found guilty, you know, here he is, your life's ruined, you're going to go to prison. As soon as the court adjourned, he got up and immediately went over to those that were found not guilty and congratulated them. That's the first thing he did.
And that jury in Baton Rouge, the two black men were the ones who were found not guilty, Eketry Fuller, who was on the lottery board, and Greg Tarver, the state lawmaker. The seven others were found guilty. But the feds, to show you, they came after Edwin again. People may forget, but he was a co-defendant with Jim Brown. He was found not guilty when they went after him one more time.
But, you know, people that seek leadership roles understand that they come with certain risk, I guess, of having mm-hmm. so much attention to you. But how you handle it, what did Hemingway say, grace under pressure? Trump's making an F, I have to say, on that issue, grace under pressure.
Well, when Edwin Edwards showed up at Oakdale, he saw the former governor of Alabama there as well, Don Siegelman. And Siegelman says, Edwin, what are you doing here? He says, well, I was convicted on 17 counts of fraud and racketeering. Don, what are you doing here? He said, I was convicted of giving a board seat to a campaign contributor. That's why he went to federal prison. In Louisiana, every governor who is governor does that. And by the way, who are you going to, as Edwin Washington Edwards said, are you going to reward your friends or your enemies? You basically.
There you go.
But thank you for coming in today. And Steve Wynum, the former budget director for another of my favorite governors, Charles Elson Buddy Romer III, says, Louis Unglesby and Dan Mulday are my absolute favorite guests on your show. I've never disagreed with anything either of them said, and I could find it hard to imagine anybody could. Steve Wynum in St. Francisville, Louisiana. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for listening, too. Now we're with Dane Sherman on the left, the professor, speaking as Citizen Sherman from Southeastern Louisiana University, noted author as well, and Troy Hebert, the former state lawmaker, who's bullish not only on our governor, but our former president. And Troy, we just heard from a Trump naysayer in Louis Owens Unglesby. Your thoughts about what happened in Manhattan last week? Was this a witch hunt, or was it the real deal?
Well, first, good morning, Jim and Dane, and to your listeners. I mean, first of all, I just heard your previous guest talk about why is Trump attacking the justice system. I think there's a lot of hypocrisy in that statement, because he's attacking the justice system because the justice system is attacking him. I mean, it's pretty obvious that if he wouldn't be running for president, they would not be going after him. And the shameful thing about this whole situation, and I want to remind the listeners, I'm an independent, not a Democrat or Republican, is that the Democrats need to be careful what they wish for. So when the Republican district attorney in Livingston Parish indicts Joe Biden, and as a judge with the last name of Landry, they're going to see what unfair really is. And that's what happened to Trump in New York. It was a jury made up of 95% of Democrats, probably, or liberals, should I say. And you had a Hispanic judge who was obviously biased. So be careful what you ask for.
Okay, that's a very simplistic way to look at it. Dane Sherman, I suspect you have a different point of view.
Yeah, though I respect Troy and I respect what he thinks, I disagree. I think that, if he didn't want to do the time, which we'll see what's going to happen, Trump shouldn't have done the crime. And he just was reckless. He micromanaged his legal defense, and it was a terrible legal defense as a result. And he's guilty, and he's going to have to deal with it.
But does dealing with it mean losing an election? Right now, it seems that based on everything that's happened, Dane, as James and Metairie just said, he's like John Cameron Swayze in Timex, takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
No, this is going to hurt him. It's going to hurt him in swing states. It's going to hurt him with the undecided or even the middle-of-the-road voters that are not particularly partisan. It hurts him bad. And the evidence that it hurts him bad, he wouldn't be screaming to the top of his lungs. Mike Johnson, even Kevin McCarthy, screaming to the top of their lungs of how unfair it was, how they return this, how they want to go to the Supreme Court and get this overturned. If they weren't scared and shaking in their boots, they would just be saying, "I did it. He did it." You know, sort of the Edwin Edwards approach. I'm the crook. Mm-hmm. Vote for me. And he's not doing that. He's screaming to the top of his lungs while he's also saying, "Oh, but it helps us in the polls." No, it's not going to help us with the voters. It's going to be very, very detrimental. And he knows that, and he's acting accordingly, and it's hypocrisy that he's playing these games with the voters and with the public.
If he's breathing, he likely will win Louisiana and every other Southeastern Conference state, with the possible exception of Georgia. But Troy Hebert, Bill Cassidy has had an epiphany. The soon-to-be 67-year-old senior U.S. senator from Louisiana is now a Trumper. He says this was a bogus verdict, and here's a guy who voted to impeach him and voted to uphold the election and says he will vote for the Republican nominee. Well, he may not want to say it's Donald Trump, but it's Donald Trump. Troy Hebert, what about Bill Cassidy having a conversion at age 67?
Well, Senator Cassidy, his problem is he has to decide where he's at. And the problem is he's flip-flopped a number of times, and I'm afraid the people in Louisiana are probably not going to forget that. So, but look, he's smart enough to know he's up for re-election. He's going to do what he can. He's a sitting senator. But I do want to say this about the trial is that let's go back to the fact that the whole problem with this trial thing is taking us away from the issues that's important to the American people. And the Democrats have been very successful in changing the narrative and not focusing on Joe Biden's failed presidency with immigration. We lose in the big cities with crime, interest rates at 8%. Why aren't we talking
8%?
About that, Jim? And so they're very,
okay.
7-8%.
All right,
it's
well,
not, it's not the four.
Inflation
it
has
was
come down.
Trump.
Interest rates are high, but he's not head of the Fed. He's the president of the United
States.
Well,
but he's the president. And under Trump, we had a better economy.
Well, that's arguable as well. We had an enormous deficit, bigger than Biden's. We'll talk. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Troy Hebert and Dane Sherman with us, differing thoughts about Donald Trump. And we also get their take on what's happened with the legislative session coming to a crescendo and Governor Jeff Landry declaring victory. But Dane Sherman was stating that if the election were on the issues, that Trump would win. But ultimately, the election may swing on personal matters and evangelicals, whether they will waver in their support for Donald John Trump. And in the old days, independent of a guilty verdict in this trial, which was about illegal payments, not about the actual act, just the act would be enough, having unprotected sex with a porn star and his wife being at home with an infant son. But the evangelicals, they don't seem to mind Dane Sherman. They're backing Donald Trump apparently to the end. And they, of course, know that he put three Supreme Court justices on the court who voted the way they wanted on abortion.
Jim, the evangelicals are just like another evangelical, Bill Cassidy, who have had an epiphany. And they have decided they're going to be with this guy, and he's not going to lose them. Where I disagree with Troy is, number one, deficit is not, the debt is not accrued under Biden as it did with Trump. The unemployment rate's the lowest in my lifetime or stretch. If you had money in the market when Trump left office, it's doubled. and inflation is stabilized, is down. The border is, the numbers at the border are even down, and it would be even farther down if they would have, if Trump would have allowed the House to vote and the Senate to vote on the Lankford bill that was going to be the tightest border security in history. But instead, Trump pulled the plug, because the only thing he has really in the fall is the border, the border, the border. That's
all right. Mark in New Orleans. Mark, you're on the air with Troy and Dane. Hi, Mark.
Yeah. Hey, Jim. You mentioned evangelicals. Hey, Dane, how are you doing?
Just fine, Mark.
I'm wondering, you know, I was in seminary, a Baptist seminary in the 90s when Bill Clinton was found out about Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, and everyone at the seminary was just, they were floored. They were like, this is the most horrible thing in the world. And these same evangelicals now are saying, hey, I know he's a jerk, but he's not my pastor. And my question is, where do they go if the election, next election, goes to Biden? What happens to the evangelicals?
All right. But let's get Troy's take on that. Troy, are the evangelicals being hypocritical?
Well, no, let's look at it this way. The evangelicals are just like the majority of Americans. They're stuck between two evils, and they've decided to go with the lesser evil. I mean, let's face it, is that unfortunately we have two old guys that's running. Neither one of them is probably the best two candidates in America, but they're the only two candidates. And so the evangelicals have to say which one is better. You have to remember, under the Biden administration, his Justice Department went after Catholics. Okay, he's pro-abortion.
Now wait a minute, Biden is a Catholic. Biden's a Catholic.
Well, okay, but the Justice Department has proven it went after Catholics.
What Catholics?
I mean, that's
what
a proven
Catholic,
fact, Jim.
What Catholics did they go after?
Well, Jim, you didn't see on the news how they went after, and they said these radical Catholics were doing things. That was proven in a congressional hearing. I mean, we could debate that all day long, but the fact is they're picking, like most Americans, the less of two evils. They don't love Trump. They just cannot stand Biden. And I think that's where the majority of us are. I've said this many times in your program.
I think they do love Trump. I think they really love him. I love him a
lot.
It reminds me of the David Duke phenomenon when they would say, I don't like him, but I like his policies. Translated, I like him a lot. And Dane Sherman, they love Donald Trump. The evangelicals love this man.
Look, Jim, there are all these comics that come up and say, I want a woman to love me like the followers of Trump love Trump. No matter what you say, that he did out there in the world, they're going to keep backing him, keep believing him, keep loving him. So I'm going to disagree again, respectfully, with Troy. The followers love Trump. Biden, I think he's been a transformational president. He hasn't gotten the credit for what he has accomplished, pulling us out of the hole that Trump left us in.
Well, Troy, is you say Jeff Landry is going to Washington with the soon-to-be-returned former president, Donald John Trump, who will become the modern-day Grover Cleveland and bring Jeff Landry. Why would Landry go to Washington with a guy who hasn't necessarily been loyal to his lieutenants? Rick didn't work out for Rex Tillerson, who left his job at Exxon. It didn't work out for Jeff Sessions, who became Attorney General and left a pretty good gig as a U.S. Senator. Why would Jeff Landry say, I'm with you, I'm going?
Because, Jim, I think you got the opposite. It's not that he wasn't loyal to them. They weren't loyal to him. I mean, Jeff Sessions basically cost him as president by allowing the special counsel to be appointed under the Russia investigation. So those two guys you mentioned were total failures, and I don't blame Trump being against them. But let me tell you about Governor Landry. Probably one of the better jobs, and there's not too many better jobs than the governor of the state of Louisiana, but being a U.S. Attorney General under Donald Trump is a much better job than being the governor of the great state of Louisiana.
Dane?
I don't have any idea the possibilities of that. I mean, I think obviously, if you look at what's going on this session and the previous sessions, that Jeff Landry is looking like Bobby Jindal. He's much more interested in his next job than he is with this job. So in that case, he may think that this is going to be his ride to the top. And unfortunately, Louisiana is going to pay the price just like we did with Jim.
Well, I would think he would certainly go if he were offered the vice presidency. In that way, even if Trump were to lose, Landry would remain governor of Louisiana. That's the way it works. He doesn't have to give up his position. And I would think that, now someone has whimsically said he will be on the short list. He would be a legitimate running mate for Donald Trump. I think Jeff Landry, he has all the check marks, except he's not in the swing state, but neither was Mike Pence. And when you look at Joe Biden, neither was Kamala Harris. So Troy Hebert, could Landry end up being vice president of the United States of America?
I know Jeff Landry well. The vice presidency doesn't have nearly enough action for Governor Landry. I think he would pick the much better job of being attorney general and parlaying that possibly in the running for president. Because let's face it, the vice president of the United States is probably the most do-nothing job there is in government.
What do you think of Landry's first full session?
I think he did well. I mean, he came in, and I tell you what, he got probably, I would say, 80% of what he wanted. And if you really asked him, he might have got 100% of what he wanted because he had to throw a little red meat out there for them to get.
All right, Dane, what about Governor Landry in session number one?
Not enough focused on the state. The insurance, the homeowners and car insurance is still going to kill us. No real hurricane preparation. I think the Log Gator voucher program is a total disaster. But I'm hoping that we get through without having this crazy session. Constitutional convention. If we can avoid that, we may survive Landry's reign in Louisiana.
Now, State Superintendent of Education Kate Brumley has endorsed a group's so-called edutainment videos at a statewide teacher conference last week, making Louisiana the sixth state to partner with PragerU. What do you make of this, Dane?
I have watched a lot of them. They're racist, they're bigoted, they're stupid. Cade Brumley is a disgrace. He needs to resign as the superintendent of education. It has no place in Louisiana classrooms. You want to watch it for entertainment, that's great, but it's just ridiculous. It's not good content. When there's so much great content available from Khan Academy to modernstates.org, great content, the best in the world, and yet we're going to do this foolishness because it's going to score political points with the right. PragerU is not good for Louisiana schools, and they need to back off of that as soon as they can.
The Department of Education under Superintendent Brumley plans to share a list of the group's videos that teachers are allowed but not required to use in social studies lessons. Is this much ado about nothing, or is this a cause for concern, Troy Hebert?
Well, first of all, you know, Dane's a professor. He's been at it a while, so he knows a lot about that. So I'll defer to him on that. But I'll just say this. Anybody that can count to three can tell you that the public education system, not only in Louisiana, but the United States has failed. I don't have the answers that Dane may have, but if we don't do something, we're losing it, and we're losing it fast.
Well, what do we make of the state moving forward? Are we going to have a constitutional convention, Troy?
I don't know. The problem with that is that we don't. It's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get, and that's the problem. That's why I think the special interests. Just ask yourself this way: if you're doing well today, you don't want to change the rules. If you're not doing well today, you want to change the rules. So that old saying, "The way you stand depends on where you sit."
Dane, constitutional convention or not?
I think if it happens, it fails at the polls. So I think that's the risk, and maybe finally Governor Landry realized, hey, I want this. I want to make Grigsby and Respone and Boise Bollinger happy, but I think it dies.
Listener, we're very short on time, but Cameron Henry, yes or no? Is he doing a good job, Troy?
I think he is. You know, as serving in the Senate for years, the Senate presidency is one of the most powerful positions
and
in the next to the government.
Cameron on the right track?
Yes, better than I expected.
Okay, got to roll. Thanks, gentlemen. Back tomorrow. See you then.